At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome back to yet another edition, a sparkling edition of On The Record. This is the podcast series that we do with Audio Boom, our friends. And of course, where you can get it is all manner of different places. You can get it on iTunes, you can get it on Spotify. If you haven't got it on either of those things, you can go to Podbean, you can go to Acast, all the usual kind of platforms where you can get podcasts. And the podcast is doing really well, so thank you to everybody who gets it. We do it twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays. And, you know, long may it continue.
Indeed. And thank you all for listening, because without you, we wouldn't have an audience, so it's great.
Well, that's very true.
And it gets worldwide as well. We've had some people, you know, getting back to us from places like Australia,
Singapore. Well, you know, we've got the ability to do, you know, what they call the kind of diagnostics on the listeners and all that, and where they all are. So it's very interesting.
It is indeed. Now, I'll tell you what I want to talk to you about.
Yeah, go on.
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump.
We haven't talked about Trump for a long time.
We haven't talked about Donald Trump
now,
for a long time.
Just within the last week or so, he got the clearance, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
From the official Mueller inquiry, the two-year inquiry, which concluded that he had nothing to do with colluding with the Russians in any way to change the vote in favour of him against the Democratic Party during the presidential election.
Right.
Well, I could have told you that years ago.
Well, I mean, they spent 2 years on this report, which cost millions and millions and millions of dollars, right? Now,
excuse me.
I don't know whether you followed it that closely, but it seems to me that the America that you and I worked in has changed irreparably. You talked about this a little while ago, about how there's all these kind of kids now who want to be socialists, right?
That's right.
Some journalists there who didn't exist when we worked there are so partisan, either pro-Trump or anti-Trump, that it's literally... I mean, Andrew Neil made a good point once. He said he went to New York and he watched two television shows.
Yeah.
One was on Fox, where they had four people discussing Trump, all of whom were pro-Trump.
Yeah.
And then he watched CNBC, in which loads of people... MSNBC, in which they had four panellists who were all anti-Trump.
Right.
He said, would it be a better idea to put them all in the same show?
Yeah.
Instead of having one show which is all anti,
exactly,
and one show which is pro.
Yeah.
It's madness.
It is, yeah.
So the people who still think he's guilty are still saying, oh, well, he hasn't been exonerated.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's saying, well, I have been exonerated.
Of course he has, yeah. And
he's certainly not going to prison.
He's certainly not going to prison. He's not going to be prosecuted or impeached or anything else. But anyway, and I saw Piers talking about it on his show.
GMB, yeah.
Yeah, at the end of last week, whatever. Now, what I was going to say to you was, excuse me, is that... this is not a Porky book review, but a fascinating book has dropped into my possession.
Yes.
Which is so relevant because it's called Commander in Cheat.
Oh, yeah.
And it's about Donald Trump.
Mm.
And it's
good title.
Well, it's based on the fact that, according to all people who've played golf with him, all experts and everybody else, he is the world's biggest cheater at golf. I mean, literally, he's known to his caddies as Pele.
Right.
Because of his ability to use his foot to put his ball where he wants
it, right?
Rather than where it lies.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
Well, do you know, that doesn't surprise me, because one of the things I've always said about golf, and it's true, I think, as a metaphor for life, that the way that people play golf is a very good indication of the kind of character they are.
Well, funny...
Because if you cheat at golf, basically, you're cheating yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, funny you should say that, but this book opens with the line from P.G. Wodehouse.
Oh, yeah.
He was never a great author.
P.G. Wodehouse was a sort of humorist, wasn't he?
Yeah, I never read anything he wrote, did you?
I think I did, yeah.
I think he was a bullshitter. And
well, no, he was one of those kind of guys from the 20s, wasn't he?
Was he like Thurber and all those people, you know?
Yeah, kind of, yeah. He was certainly, I think you would call him a humorist.
Yeah, but the problem is a lot of people in this modern generation are called humorists and funny people, but they're not funny. You know,
well,
some
of
these TV comedians I watch, they've never made me laugh once.
No.
I can make people laugh. Mm. You can make people laugh. Right, that's obvious from the messages we get.
Do you know,
back
like
on,
when you
on,
see these descriptions of people and they say, "Oh yes, he's an observational comedian."
Observational, yeah.
What the fuck does that mean?
I don't know.
Does that mean he looks at things and comments on them and makes people
laugh? I don't know. I know
that's maybe what we are.
I know that during my broadcasting career in radio, we've tried to employ, you know, quite a lot of comedians who are supposed to be terribly funny. And
I must admit,
and
it's
guess
been
what?
A struggle.
They're not.
It's been a struggle.
They're not. No.
But
no.
You're a very funny person. I mean,
I am
you
very
are.
Funny.
And
I agree.
We don't want to turn this into some hagiography. Yeah. But I mean, you are. Many people do describe you as a comedy genius.
Yes. Well, you know, I wouldn't say genius. But anyway, listen. So what happens here is, so P.G. Wodehouse, the famous quote is, "If you want to know a man's character, play golf with him."
Yes.
Is exactly what you've just said. Probably your father would have endorsed that as well.
He would have done. We used to play, and I think I've told you this before, we used to play in the European Press Golf Association, right? Which was basically a lot of British pressmen against a team from Germany.
Right.
But the Germans were all very wealthy. Because in Germany at the time, which was the 70s, golf was a very expensive game.
Right, okay,
you couldn't just go down your local...
by the upper classes.
Yeah, and it was, and so instead of, like, for example, the chief sports reporter from the Hamburger Morning Post, it was the fucking owner of the Hamburger Morning Post.
And
his wife.
Yeah.
And there was this one particular guy whose name, I think, was... He was a doctor of some kind. Mm. And you never know with these Germans, you know.
Yeah.
But he wasn't a very good golfer.
Right.
And you would play with him, and he'd hit one off the tee and go into the woods. You'd hear him slashing about, right?
Yeah.
Slashing about again. Finally, the ball would emerge on the green.
Yes.
You'd never see the guy from tee to green.
No, right.
And he would finally put the ball into the hole.
Yeah.
And you would always say, "How much, doctor?" Mm. And he would always say, "Fumph."
Yeah.
Always five. He never scored more than five. And you fucking knew.
Yeah.
This is a guy who took about five in the woods.
Yeah.
So he's probably more like an eight or a nine.
Right.
And
okay.
He only ever said "fumph."
Okay. Well. Just as an interim, Trump first met the porn actress Stormy Daniels.
Stormy Daniels, yes.
At a golf tournament.
Oh, yeah.
But what they point out in this book is that golf is the perfect game for Donald Trump.
Hmm.
A mass cheat, they allege, okay?
Right.
Because golf relies entirely on self-policing.
Yeah.
There are no referees, no umpires, no third-party adjudicators. The glory of golf is it's incumbent on its participants to maintain its integrity, and all of Donald Trump's decriers would say he's got no integrity. So it's a perfect game.
I mean, you have got to be pretty low, because it is it's one of those games that you have to police yourself.
Yes.
But if you cheat at golf, you're basically cheating yourself.
Yeah.
That's the point, because there's no point saying you went round. Well, you know, if somebody says to you, "What did you go round in?"
Yeah.
And say you're playing on your own.
Yes.
And you say, "Oh, I went round in 72 because I'm such a good golfer."
Yes.
If you actually went round in 82,
well,
there's no point.
Apparently, his attitude is that rules are for losers.
Yeah.
Okay. He gets on with it. And so far in his presidency, and he's about halfway through it now, isn't he?
He is.
$300 million has been spent in Secret Service bills to protect him. He's played twice. He's played three times as much golf already after half his presidency than Obama played throughout the course of his presidency.
Yes.
He likes getting out on the golf
course. He's played an awful lot of golf courses.
Yeah,
but then again, he owns a bunch of golf courses as well.
He owns golf courses in Scotland and Ireland and in America. Okay?
Well, do you know, when I was driving, last time I went to see my sister and my mother, and I came out of Kennedy Airport and we drove around. You come across what used to be known as the Throg's Neck Bridge, but is now called, or the Triborough Bridge, but it's now called the Kennedy Bridge, I think.
Yeah.
But as you know, as you sort of turn into basically Westchester County, there's a massive Trump golf course there.
Is there?
Which has been based, the clubhouse looks almost exactly like Turnberry,
right?
Which he also now owns, but it's a famous Scottish, you know, golf course.
Yeah.
And it's got a huge Trump links.
Right.
You know, spelled out in the grass.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can see it probably from fucking 20,000 feet.
Yeah,
you know, it's incredible. And it's right in the middle of what you might call a very built-up area.
That's right, yeah.
You know,
very
urban. It looks wrong. It looks weird.
Yes, that's right, yeah. Anyway, according to reports, this book, by the way, is written by a guy called Rick Riley, Commander-in-Chief. He says he's spoke to hundreds of people who played golf with him. He says... the idiosyncrasies he employs are that he habitually reduces his score. He's often been seen to take a ball from his pocket to replace the one he has just inconveniently hit into the water feature. He steals opponents' balls if they're in a better position than his.
Right.
And since he's become president, and his rounds now come complete with 60 Secret Service agents and 6 SWAT guys and a cart following him with the nuclear weapons code, he has shown no hint. Yeah.
That's a bit harsh, isn't it? Imagine that.
Yeah. No hint that he might tone down his behaviour to a manner more suited to the most powerful man in the world. Yeah. The author reveals that the caddies employed at one of the courses frequented by the president have come up with a nickname to sum up his barefaced habit of kicking his ball forward into a better position. They call him Pele.
Mm. Now, I'm told that Bill Clinton was a bit of a cheat at golf as well, which would be entirely accurate given what we know about Bill Clinton.
Indeed, you see,
I don't think he's a particularly what you might call wholesome individual.
No, no. But the strangest thing here, says the author, is that Trump is actually quite a good golfer and could play off a handicap of about 6.
Right, that's very good.
Well, that's what he tells people, but the author says it's somewhere between 9 and 12, you know. Trump, however, insists for some bizarre reason that when asked what his golf handicap is, he says 2.8. I didn't know you could have points, did you?
Well, technically speaking, you do, because that's how they work it out. But normally, if you have 2.8, that means you round it up to 3.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because what happens is when you put your cards in to the member, to the place where you're a member, they average out. In America, when I used to play there, they average out, you know, the last 10 or something like that.
Sure, sure.
So you can go up to 2.8, down to 2.7.
Yeah.
If you get to 2.4, then you're 2.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand, yeah. But anyway, other anomalies are that the man who wants to build a wall to keep illegal immigrants out of the country routinely employs dozens of illegal immigrants on his US courses.
Yeah.
They're seen there every day, you know, tending the courses, serving in the restaurants.
Well, also Mar-a-Lago, you know, his big mansion down in Florida.
Yes.
You would probably think is probably, you know, a place of employment for an awful lot of Cuban people.
Yeah.
You know, Spanish, Hispanic people down in Florida.
Yes,
you
know. Yes, absolutely. Mm. Also, for a man who has constantly preached that global warming does not exist.
Yes.
And it's all, you know, a fantasy of left-wingers and mad people in the east of the world.
Yeah.
He, at his Irish golf course, he's applied for planning permission to build a sea defence to be funded by the Irish government because of the seas rising due to due to global warming.
Well, he'll probably say it's nothing to do with global warming, though, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But anyway, I mean, look, that's so interesting, as I thought it would tie in with Trump getting the all clear from the Russian thing. Now, other current stories, which I think are brilliant, right, which we can talk about.
Mm.
What about the revelation recently that old Mel B and Jerry...
Yes, the Spice Girls lesbian romp.
Yeah,
as detailed
together.
By Piers Morgan. He's got a new series of life stories coming.
He has, yeah.
Now, I was talking about this the other day to somebody, because I said to myself, now, if you were, and I'm not casting any aspersions here before we go any further.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you were promoting a book or a TV show or any kind of publicity material about, say, a world tour, you might be told by your publicist, here's something we need to do. Let's get the story out there on the front pages. Yeah. Let's create some kind of an incident that everybody will go, blimey, right? Now, this is that incident.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying it's not true.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that she's made it up, but it's quite interesting timing, I'd say.
Mel B's got a book coming out, and, of course, they've got a tour. They don't need to sell tickets for the tour. It's sold out. That's not a problem.
But they haven't taken it around the world yet.
They haven't taken it around the world because they can't find a domestic arrangement with their children to all get away at the same time.
Well, also, the other reason, apparently, is they don't want to risk touring America. Because it's one, it's quite a big commitment in terms of time.
Yes.
And also, they're not sure they'd all get on in well enough for long enough
Do it. Or that they're popular enough in America to sell out huge
venues.
They
probably are. Maybe. I mean, I was amazed that they were as popular as they are already.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
When I saw them announce the tour, and I thought, blimey, they're doing like football stadiums.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you would think the Spice Girls would do the O2 in London, which is a big enough venue.
Yes, that's right.
But they're doing football stadiums. I thought, no way are they going to sell out football stadiums. But it turns out every girl...
Yeah.
Who was around about the same age as my daughter?
Right,
loves the Spice Girls. Every girl, every woman that I know who's under 30, loves the Spice Girls. They're all going to see them,
and will take their partner with them.
Yeah, they're all going to see them.
That's it. But you see, what about? I mean, old Jerry must have been mortified because she, A, likes to be the centre of attention.
Yes.
And that's why the group broke up in the first place. Mel B and Jerry battling for supremacy within the group. Well, Posh couldn't care less anymore. Posh is still getting £2.5 million, you know, in royalties from the songs that they're singing.
She's not going on the show,
not there,
is she?
No. Yeah. No. I mean, the facts of the tour are amazing. For instance, the latest fallout between them and the management company is that the management company have hired some singer who I'd never heard of, but apparently Shani or somebody, is it? Or
Shania Twain?
Shania Twain, it might be, I don't know. It might not be her. If it's not her, I apologise.
Because she's quite big as well, Shania
Twain. Well, they've hired a singer who's had four number one hits in this country as warm-up for the Spice Girls at all their big shows.
Well, it could be her.
But they're giving her $100,000 an appearance, and the Spice Girls don't like that because it's $100,000 appearance they don't get.
Well, yeah, but they'll be getting more than that, won't they?
Oh, they're getting altogether $2.3 million each for the tour, right?
What, just for
the
whole
British tour?
Yeah, that's not much.
Well, I didn't think it was either.
I thought that'd be what they... Then you're sure they're not getting that per appearance?
No, definitely not. No, no. For the whole tour, they're getting between 2.2
and 2.3. Mind you, I mean, it's not a massive tour, is it?
No, it's not.
They're only doing about six dates or something.
And by the way, it costs an awful lot of money to hire Wembley Stadium and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, like U2, for example, did... I think they did five nights at the O2 in London.
Yeah.
And for most of, I think for most of what they do, they're over $2 million a night.
Well, that may well be, and I don't know what they charge and what the Spice Girls charge. But I read a really in-depth piece on it, you know, before the revelation about, you know, alleged revelation about
the lesbian romp.
The lesbian romp. That's right. Saying that.
Well, I don't think there's anything alleged about it because they've admitted. I mean, she's admitted it, right? Jerry hasn't denied it.
No. Jerry has qualified it with a statement. And said things like, well, all five of us used to sleep in the same bed, you know, because we were, you know, just young girls.
So it's like a non-denial.
Well, and things about, you know, her statement, if you look at it, has been sort of non-specific, if you see what I mean.
That's what makes me wonder about it.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah. But if I was Ginger Spice's husband, who is a wealthy man in his own right, Mr. Christian Horner.
Is he the racing guy?
He runs Red Bull Racing, Formula One, and has a franchise of Aston Martin.
He cares, does he?
Well, I would.
Why?
If I suddenly found
that... you think your wife might be a bisexual? What's wrong with that?
Well, you know...
And you ask her to see if she wants to reenact it with somebody else?
No. Hey? I think it's humiliating, isn't it?
Well, he wasn't married to her then.
It doesn't matter. The rest of the world now knows that, you know...
Why would that be a bad thing?
Well, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, it's a good thing. What I'm saying is that you can imagine the amount of mickey taking that might go on inside the Formula One motor racing industry when they all come to work and say,
You don't think anybody has a threesome at the bloody Monte Carlo Grand Prix?
Well, I think
that's going on all the time.
I can't believe
you're so square about it.
I can't say.
If I was Christian Horner, I'd be asking her to get Mel B down for the next weekend.
That's a disgusting thing to say.
Why not?
Well, you're telling me that you think that there's a sexual titillation in knowing that your wife has been involved with another woman.
Why wouldn't there be?
I think that's a disgusting thing to say morally.
Why?
Your moral compass is a lot more bent than mine is, mate, believe me.
There's nothing bent about me. I can tell you that.
I'm saying there is.
Saving money right now at Menards. From smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to fire extinguishers and more, get a home safety products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors are perfect for your living spaces, offering protection and peace of mind. Save big money on all Kidde products at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Now, you see, Scott Walker died recently.
Scott Walker, of the Walker Brothers.
The singer, yeah.
It's all over.
The sun ain't going to shine anymore, was his
the
big
The sun
hit.
Ain't going to shine. No, his big one, surely, was Let's Go to San Francisco, where all the flowers grow so very high.
I don't know about that.
If you go to San Francisco, be sure to wear some flowers in your hair. That's it. Is this it? No, we can't hear that. You need to put that closer. What song's that?
I think this is The Sun Ain't Gonna Shine Anymore, isn't it?
Oh, that's no good. I want his San Francisco song.
Yeah, well, all right.
Yeah.
Sun Ain't Gonna Shine Anymore. There you go.
Yeah, but that's not his most famous song.
Well, that's the one that everyone's saying.
San Francisco
one,
please.
That's the one everybody's saying is the most famous song that he did.
Everybody likes the San Francisco one. He was in the Walker Brothers, and they had a couple of hits, didn't they?
They had a lot of hits. Well, people like David Bowie and Mark Arnold from Soft Cell are saying basically that he was their main influence.
Really, their main influence. Yeah. Well, I'm not sure about that. Now, I tell you what I was going to talk to you about, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to talk to you about the situation involving that ship you were telling me about.
Oh, what, the Viking Sky?
Well, I mean, you know, funny enough, it got stranded off Molde, where, of course, is where Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has blooded himself as a...
I think you've got it wrong, you know, on the Walker Brothers.
What?
I've got all of their songs here. The Sun Ain't Gonna Shine Anymore, No Regrets, Make It Easy on Yourself, After the Lights Go Out. We're all alone. Stay with me, baby. There's no Walking in the Rain. There's no San Francisco song in
it. Oh, it must be somebody else who did it.
I think you're confusing it.
Must be somebody else who did it. But
Loving Arms.
I wouldn't worry too much about that. Now, just talking about these ships, okay? We've both agreed we'd never go on a cruise, okay?
Yeah.
I
would never go on a cruise, no.
I'd certainly never go on a cruise on a ship that nearly turned over in the sea, because it did, and it was a horrifying experience. Do you know what I can't sort of work out? And I don't want to put any sort of, you know, thoughts into evil people's minds.
Yeah.
But you know that we seem now, the West I'm talking about, to have defeated ISIS, don't we?
Well, we keep being told that we've defeated ISIS, but I'm not sure I buy that.
Yeah.
Do you buy it?
Well, I don't know, because I'm not out there fighting them.
Well, I think we might have chased them out of a particular part of Syria and a particular part of Iraq.
Yes.
However, that doesn't mean that they've all been killed off and they're not going to suddenly turn up in Pimlico with a fucking, you know, bomb strapped to them.
But you know, it's absolutely for sure that they did hold big swathes of both Syria and Iraq at one stage.
Well, they did, yeah.
Physically, you know, physical presence, and they're not there anymore.
No.
Now, I blame all this on David Cameron and Tony Blair.
You've always said that.
We should never have invaded Iraq. That was the maddest thing that ever happened. And in fact, when I saw Tony Blair recently on Piers Morgan's show, and he went on the show, obviously, to try and blow his trumpet about why Brexit's got to be defeated, Piers put it to him and said, well, you know, who are you to tell us what's happening? You made the disastrous decision to invade Iraq. And all Blair did was raise his eyebrows, you know what I mean?
Right.
It was the middle of a live show.
Well, he doesn't like talking about it, does he?
Well, he didn't fight back.
Yeah.
He didn't say, Piers, you cannot say that. I saved the world. Because he's always told us he saved the world, because what I did was I smashed up all sorts of terrorist enclaves.
Well, I think his line used
Britain.
To be, and I had some sympathy for him when he used to say this, his line used to be that after 9/11, the world changed.
Yes.
And he was right about that, because nobody could have ever foreseen that happening, right?
Yes.
Maybe they should have foreseen it, but they didn't.
Yeah.
And the problem is that the world did change. Now, you can argue that Bush was wrong to go after
Bush
Saddam
was terribly
Hussein.
Wrong.
But you can equally understand why it happened, though. I can, anyway.
I think it happened because of Tony Blair's ego. Tony Blair wanted to be seen as the second most powerful man in the world.
Yes, that's true.
Walking around Camp David with his hands in his jean pockets and his thumbs over his belt, looking, you know, for all the world to be Bush's best mate.
Yeah.
And then Bush used to treat him with contempt. Yeah. They went to one conference one time. And
he called
Blair
him Blair. Hey, Blair.
Hey, yo, Blair.
That's right.
Yo, Blair. You know, what are you up to? And Blair actually grovelled to him and said, look, you know, if we want to start, you know, making friends with these people, why don't I go as the ambassador to the West? No, don't need that. Yo, Blair, get lost. You know, and all this kind of stuff.
But I think that was just George Bush's way, wasn't it?
Well, George Bush is known as 43, by the way, back in Texas. Yeah. No, he's known as 43 because he was the 43rd president, wasn't he? And was a complete clown, in my view. And he was told repeatedly.
Although people are now saying, given that Donald Trump is in the White House, that actually maybe George W. Bush wasn't quite so bad as people thought.
Well, Donald Trump would never make as mad a decision on war as
I don't think he would
as George W. Bush did, because otherwise he'd have invaded North Korea by now. Because I'm damn sure George W. Bush would have done. You know, but no, the point I'm making is that Bush had this like perverse view that unfinished business for my daddy. You know. But George H. Bush was right not to invade Iraq, because it caused the chaos it's caused since then. And all the military advisers in Washington told George W. Bush there is no way that the people who brought down the Twin Towers have an allegiance with Saddam Hussein.
Well,
they actually hate each other.
Except
they actually hate each other.
Except that knowing that, There's a great book called Bush's War, written by Bob Woodward.
From,
you know, Washington Post. Woodward and Bernstein.
Yeah.
And he, in the opening sort of chapter of that book, describes a meeting between George Bush, Senior.
Yes.
And sorry, George Bush Junior.
Yes.
Donald Rumsfeld. And Dick Cheney,
yeah,
and a couple of other people in the, in the Oval Office, at which they decided they were going after Saddam Hussein. And they didn't actually care that he might not be connected to 9/11. They just decided this is what we're going to do.
I know, and as you know, unfinished business. My daddy, you know, it was a completely the wrong decision.
And as for Blair,
I
spent one evening with Blair in Wales years and years and years ago, where we sat at one of these big, you know, fundraising dinners. And he was a very charming man. And charmingly naive in some ways.
Yes.
Because I remember having a long conversation with him about Wales, which he seems to know fucking nothing about. He had no
idea.
He had no idea
where it was.
About, well, just about the political landscape.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I said, you know, for example, that BBC Wales is entirely run by people that were formerly Plaid Cymru activists.
Yes.
He went, really?
Yeah.
I said, I said, they're constantly kicking the shit out of the Labour Party down here.
Yeah.
And the reason you're going to get problems with the devolution situation here is that Plaid Cymru are going to get more powerful because all the media is owned by the Nationalists.
Yes.
He went, really?
Yeah.
And nobody had ever told him this.
Did he know that the National Health Service in Wales is one of the worst institutions in the world?
Well, it wasn't then.
Well, it is now.
But it is now.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
they devolved it.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
And they haven't got the money to do it properly.
No.
And I
people are actually driving 50 miles to get across the border back into England just to get medical treatment.
Well, I mean, you and I have spoken about this before.
Wales.
I mean, the idea
I saw these things coming,
yes,
but nobody
I know.
Took any notice.
Well, they don't, you see, because they think you're a humorous sort of genius as opposed to being a political, serious political commentator.
Yeah.
But, similarly, with Scotland, I mean, the whole devolution project, which was his other pet project, has ruined Britain.
Yeah,
there's no question about that.
Of course it does.
You know, Northern Ireland, Scotland, and Wales have never been worse off than they are now.
I totally agree. We've got the highest tax take since the mid 60s. That's to keep all the civil servants in business, right? Yeah. But thank God that the arch clown of the Blair years, John Prescott.
Yeah.
Two Jags John.
Oh, yeah.
Named by
Champagne
Richard,
Socialist of the Year.
By Richard Littlejohn, yeah. And has a castle in Hull and about four other homes in London all at the same time.
This is the guy who gets a chauffeur-driven car take his wife 100 yards.
That's right.
Down
the air.
She wanted her hair done.
Yeah, it was the missus. The missus with her hair. You know, she wouldn't get out the car because of the wind. It's Bournemouth-like, you know.
punched that guy that threw the egg out.
Yeah, you know, I undermined him for that. That was very good. You take that and all that
great.
Kind of stuff.
But it was so funny. I remember working. I can't remember where I was. It must have been the Mirror.
Yeah.
And we were about to go off stone. And somebody said, John Preston's just punched someone. Yeah. And it was like, what?
Brilliant.
That's great.
Yeah. Hold the press. But also, he used to do so many fucking, excuse the language, I'm sorry, so many strange things.
You can swear on this podcast.
A little bit, but you know I don't like to. So many strange things. And then we found out later it was because he was actually getting his leg over with one of his assistants.
That's right, in his grace and favour apartment.
Yeah, Tracy.
Yeah, that's right.
And do you know what? I could never work that out because I thought John Prescott's wife was the best looking wife's politician's
wife. She's what you
would
describe as blousy.
No, not at all. She was a beautiful girl. She looked like Elizabeth Taylor. What was her name? I've forgotten. John.
I can't remember.
And
was it Barbara?
I thought Barbara, but I don't think it was. It doesn't sound right. Barbara Prescott. Was it Jackie Prescott or Jane Prescott?
Could have been Jackie. I'll
check.
Yeah,
something like that. But anyway, she was a beautiful looking woman, dark hair. But the problem was, as always happened in these situations, she was not up to the intellectual standards of the Blair set.
Right.
Because she was a hairdresser in Ellesmere Port.
Yes.
When John Prescott, who was a ship's steward. Pauline Prescott, that's right. So she was a hairdresser in isn't she beautiful? Look, we've got a picture of her up there, isn't she?
I mean,
beautiful woman.
I wouldn't say beautiful.
Well,
no.
I would
say blousy.
No, I wouldn't. I think that's a horrible thing to describe.
Which is not in any way
lousy.
It's not an insult.
Mm. But anyway, the point is that can you imagine like the four of them getting together? So Tony Blair, you know, Oxford and you know.
Yeah, and also he
PPE.
Was a barrister and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, barrister, PPE, politics, philosophy, economics.
Yeah.
Cherry
one of the brightest judges,
human rights lawyer, judge,
human rights lawyer, yeah. together with Pauline. You know, yes, Pauline, where do you come from?
Yeah,
I used to work in hairdressers in Ellesmere Pools. Like, you know, then John comes through the door for an haircut.
And he was a trade union official.
He was a trade union official who did bloody well to become the deputy prime minister of this country for so many years. But Blair needed him to keep the left on side. And
he was a very smart guy, Prescott.
Of course, he was smart.
People used to make fun of him as he was a bit thick.
That's right. Yeah,
but actually, he wasn't thick at all.
But anyway, his lifelong ambition.
He was born in Prestatyn, believe it or not.
Yeah, Prestatyn, North Wales. That's right. Yeah, but he was his lifelong ambition was regional parliaments.
Yeah,
and everybody said. Well,
did he not try and get one in Newcastle?
He tried to get one in the North East. Tried to get one in Yorkshire for his whole constituents. Mm. Tried to get one in the North West. He tried to get one in the Midlands. And everybody said, well, hang on, you know, how many more parliaments do you want? You've created one in Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland, right?
Yeah.
You want them now all over the country. Mm. We have parish councils, borough councils, district councils, county councils, metropolitan councils, and now you want regional councils.
Yeah.
Everybody will be employed by the state eventually.
Well, that's
exactly what they wanted.
That is what they wanted.
It's exactly what they wanted.
I mean, about this, Prescott had a stormy relationship with the privatisation of the railway industry. Oh, really?
Yeah.
He vigorously opposed the privatisation of the industry while the Labour Party was in opposition and disliked the party's policy in 1996, just before the flotation of rail track on the London Stock Exchange.
Yeah.
You forget all this stuff happened, don't you?
Yeah,
I mean,
you do.
What a nightmare that was. I mean, whoever privatised the railway in this country got it completely fucking
Should
wrong.
Be shot.
And it comes from the original Tory government before Blair got in 97. Yeah. So it was Major, basically,
I think the railway is the only thing in this country that should be nationalised, to be honest, because it's such a massive network that's got to serve the people.
And people do say that if you did nationalise it now, it wouldn't be as bad as it was back when it was bad.
No.
Because they've got ways of making it better.
Ways of making it better, and we're a wealthier society.
Yeah.
But it's the only thing in America that's nationalised. Amtrak is a nationalised...
Well, it's subsidised, isn't it? I don't know if it's nationalised.
But it's subsidised by the taxpayer. Yeah. So it is to... And what I'm saying is there's no profit motive.
Well, the problem is, though, with Amtrak, and I've noticed this since I've been going back, we don't live there anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
They've spent no money on the infrastructure of the railway system there, because one of the things my sister used to say to me was when there was a rail accident here.
Yes.
And to be fair, we haven't had any rail accidents properly, really, for a while.
No, no.
But she used to say, oh, that would never happen here in America. Yeah. Now they have rail accidents in America all the time.
Yeah, right.
Because the rolling stock is old.
And the bridges are collapsing,
aren't they? The bridges are collapsing. The railway lines are not properly maintained.
Yeah.
Do you know the... I don't think you ever came up to Connecticut, did you?
But I did, loads of times, yeah.
Well, there's
but not on the train. Just drove up.
There's a train that goes from New Haven.
Yes.
It's called the Shoreline train that goes up sort of past where my sister lives.
Yeah.
And it goes along the shore of Long Island Sound.
Yeah.
They're only just now replacing the trains.
Yeah.
Which were the same trains that I used to take in the 80s.
Golly, yeah.
I mean, that's how old they are.
Yeah, well, the rail system here is a bit better, but it's so expensive in this country because we don't... put as much government money as they do on the continent. Just to finish the Blair thing and Prescott, I was going to say he was. It was exactly the same in the Kennedy administration. Mm. Kennedy needed Lyndon Baines Johnson to get the South because, of course, he was a Catholic, the first Catholic president.
He was what they call a
Northwest.
Southern Democrat, right?
He was the Southern Democrat. That's right. Yeah. So
they were very conservative.
Very conservative and very rare. Mm. There weren't many of them because of the redneck South.
Yeah.
And you know, I've read a few books about the Kennedy and all that, and the Kennedys used to treat LBJ like a fucking peasant.
Mm.
He was this guy from the South, and he chewed tobacco and all that kind of stuff. And LBJ didn't endear himself to the President and the First Lady, Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy, when he turned up on day one in Washington, followed by a cattle truck with a head of steer in it, for the which he thought could graze in the Rose Garden. But
really?
Yeah. He was that out of touch with the Washington politics and the Washington political scene. He thought it could graze in the back garden.
Right.
Now, of course, they treated him like a peasant. The whole of the Kennedy clan, including his father.
They were pretty ghastly people, the Kennedys.
Yeah, they were really ghastly, but they didn't like peasants from Texas as they saw Lyndon Baines Johnson. Mm. Needless to say, the moment that President John F. Kennedy unfortunately got shot and had his head blown off, and Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy was no longer the First Lady, the revenge factor from the LBJ mob was instant and absolute. She was virtually thrown out of the White House with the bags after her, you know what I mean?
Maybe he was the one that had him killed.
Told never to... Well,
I've never heard that theory.
Well, that is a theory, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is a theory, yes.
Yeah, it is a theory.
Yeah,
I can't believe it's true.
I can't believe it's true.
But one of these days, in 100 years' time, we might find that it
but
is.
We still don't know who killed Kennedy.
Well, we know who pulled the trigger.
Yeah, but we don't know who ordered the killing.
He was a weird guy. Old
Lee Harvey Oswald.
Lee Harvey Oswald, because he had Russian connections.
He had Russian connections, but he also had US government connections.
Yeah, he did, yeah. Yeah, it was all of
he didn't have were mafia connections, which is who we are told ordered the killing.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And I can't imagine why the mafia would do that.
No, I can't either. Because
the one thing the mafia don't want is heat.
They don't want heat, and also they had a very good relationship with Kennedy's father. Mm. Because Kennedy's father and the mafia swung the vital votes in the 1960 election with the Teamsters in Chicago and all that.
That's what I mean. It doesn't make any sense for them to have done that.
Don't make any sense. This has been rather a sensible audio boom podcast, hasn't it?
Well, you know, occasionally we can be sensible.
We can indeed.
It doesn't just have to be entertaining. It can also be informative.
But it is always entertaining.
Well, let's hope so.
Yeah.
We can't be the judge of that.
Absolutely.
We have to leave that to our listeners.
Indeed.
And there are many more of them. And so keep telling people about it.
That's right.
Tell people to download the On The Record podcast series. Because if you haven't really started listening to it, or you have only started recently listening to it, there's loads that you can go back and through.
Indeed.
And listen to them from the beginning.
Indeed.
We're the two mics. This is On The Record.
We are. I suddenly found
What, you think your wife might be a bisexual? What's wrong with that?
Well, you know...
And you ask her to see if she wants to reenact it with somebody else?
No. Right? I think it's humiliating, isn't it? For,
because he wasn't married to her then.
It doesn't matter. The rest of the world now knows that, you know...
Why would that be a bad thing?
Well, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, it's a good thing. What I'm saying is that you can imagine the amount of mickey taking that might go on inside the Formula One motor racing industry when they all come to work and say,
You don't think anybody has a threesome at the bloody Monte Carlo Grand Prix?
Well, I think
that's going on all the time.
I can't
believe you're so square about it.
I can't say.
If I was Christian Horner, I'd be asking her to get Mel B down for the next weekend.
That's a disgusting thing to say.
Why not?
Well, you're telling me that you think that there's a sexual titillation in knowing that your wife has been involved with another woman.
Why wouldn't there be?
I think that's a disgusting thing to say morally.
Why?
Your moral compass is a lot more bent than mine is, mate, believe me.
There's nothing bent about me. I can tell you that.
I'm saying there is. He used to... do so many fucking, excuse the language, I'm sorry, so many strange things.
You can swear on this podcast.
A little bit, but I don't like to. So many strange things. And then we found out later it's because he was actually getting his leg over with one of his assistants.
That's right, in his grace and favour apartment.
Yeah, Tracy.
Yeah, that's right.
And do you know what? I could never work that out because I thought John Prescott's wife was the best looking wife's politician's
wife. She's what you would
wife.
Describe as blousy.
No, not at all. She was a beautiful girl. She looked like Elizabeth Taylor.
Many people do describe you as a comedy genius.
Yes. Well, you know, I wouldn't say genius. But anyway, listen.
Save big during Labor Day at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances. Plus, buy more to get up to an additional 20% off. Shop even more savings with 3 Stay Green 1 cubic foot vegetable and flower garden soil bags for $10. This Labor Day, take care of your home for less at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 9/3. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.